So we are starting this new text called Dhyana Swarupam. It's a very short text, only of 10 verses, and hopefully will be done in a couple of months. And basically, we had introduced the subject last week, but this text tells us what meditation is and what meditation is not. Because people sit down and meditate, or they go to some course, or they read some book, or watch a video, and they then sit down and, you know, want to meditate, and they want to learn how to meditate. Or there are some teachers of meditation or schools where they will teach you the techniques, you know, how to breathe, how to sit, what to do. But I have found very few who actually will tell you what is the goal and purpose of meditation and what are we meditating upon. And that's why I thought, even though we had done this text a few years back, I thought we should revise that, because there are some new people, and this text is it's always good to remind, even for me myself, as to what I am actually meditating upon. It's a very short text and makes it very clear. It's actually composed by Swami Tejomayananda, who is the head of the mission, who is the worldwide head of the mission. This book has been written by him in Sanskrit, and he himself has written the commentary. And today we shall do the first verse. Dhyanam nama swarupasya. Sahajam bhanam uchyate. Naitat karma visesham va. Sagunopasanam japaha. So dhyana means meditation, and the Chinese word Zen is also a modification of dhyana, because the technique of meditation was carried by the Buddhist monks from India to China and to East Asia, to even all the other countries, Japan and all. Buddhism started in India, and meditation. So the word dhyana became Zen in Chinese, and that's why they call it Zen Buddhism, or the Zen technique of meditation. So what is dhyanam? Dhyanam is meditation. And what is nama? What is the name, or what is the description of meditation, or what is meditation? Swarupasya sahajam bhanam uchyate. Swarupa means my own nature. Rupa means form. Swa means my form. So my nature, what is my nature? Sahajam bhanam uchyate. It is sahaja means effortless. Bhana means awareness. Uchyate means it is called. So what is meditation said to be, or what is meditation called? Meditation is said to be the effortless awareness of my own nature. Effortless abidance in my own nature, effortless awareness of my own nature is said to be meditation. But it's not an activity. Na etat karma visesham. It is not an activity. No, it is not an activity. It is not even saguna upasanam. It is not even praying to God. It is not even offering prayers to a form of God. Say you go to the church and light a candle for Jesus or for Mother Mary, or we go to the temple and, you know, we do a lot of rituals, elaborate prayers, and we offer flowers and we put some fruits there. Or in Hinduism, they have some of the priests will come to your house and do 4-hour, 6-hour rituals. It's not even that. It's not even prayer. And it is not japa. It is not chanting the name of God. So it is not an activity. It is not prayer to God, a form of God. And it is not chanting the name of God. But then why do people say, I am meditating? You know, and why do we have this class where we say, okay, let us all meditate? First thing is, meditation is not a verb, it's a noun. When you say, I am meditating, or I wish to meditate, or I want to learn how to meditate, or how long should I meditate, those are all errors. even though we use it here, even though we have this meditation class where we learn how to meditate. In fact, somebody asked our master, Swami Chinmayananda, from whom the mission started, he said, how long should I meditate every day? So he said, 24 hours. 24 hours? You mean I'm not supposed to do anything else? No, you should meditate 24 hours. The moment he said it is 24 hours, it cannot be an activity. It cannot be a verb. Because no matter what activity you do, you cannot do it for 24 hours. Because you need to sleep, you need to eat, you need to wash yourself, you need to go to work. So how can I meditate for 24 hours a day? And what is meditation? So they say meditation is a noun, not a verb. What it means is it is a state to be in. In that state, I am effortlessly, constantly abiding in my true nature. In who am I? I am constantly aware of that. I'm constantly abiding in that state. What do we mean by that? We'll cover it a little later. As to what do we mean by effortless abidance in my true nature or effortless awareness of my true nature, let us first see what meditation is not. People say for meditation you should sit still, you should sit in a chair or sit in the lotus position with your legs crossed on the floor and don't move, don't open your eyes, and be still. That is beneficial in a short time. When I sit for why do we sit for a short time for meditation, and then what do we do with the rest of the day? So they say that when you sit for 20 minutes or half an hour, we say every morning you should get up and sit for meditation. What we mean is that you should have a sustained, constant practice of what you will be thinking of and being aware of throughout the day. In that brief concentrated practice, the knowledge of meditation understanding becomes clear of who am I, what is meditation, what is my goal, and then that awareness should carry with you throughout the day. We shall talk about that. What is it that I should be aware of and what is it? But so sitting still is not meditation. Sitting still helps in meditation. It helps to get your mind quieted and temporarily stationed in that silence. But then that silence and that awareness should carry with you throughout the day. No matter what you are doing, no matter how you are agitated, no matter what kind of problems are there, my mind should be centered on the self. And I should continue to do my work, and there may be joys and sorrows, success and failure, heat and cold. But a person who is established in that truth remains unaffected. So that 20 minutes or half an hour or 1 hour helps me to establish myself in that inner self, which is God's presence within me. And in that silence, I experience that inner bliss, and then that carries me throughout the day. So sitting still is not meditation. How about concentrating? People say you should concentrate on a flame. There is one technique of meditation which is actually very powerful, where you have a picture or a statue or a form of God. You could have Jesus on the cross or Buddha or Krishna or Shiva. And you sit in front of the form of God, and then you close your eyes. And then you open your eyes and you pay full attention to the form from head to toe. Every inch, every wrinkle, everything becomes totally etched in your... You stare at it for a while. Then you close your eyes and you should be able to recall exactly the form that you saw. Exactly every inch, every wrinkle. If you can't, okay, then you open your eye again. Then you look at it for a while. Then you close it. So this practice of concentration on a particular form is very useful, because then what happens is that no matter anywhere you are, you can open your eyes or you can close your eyes. The moment your attention shifts, you can see that form very clearly, and that helps in our meditation. So visualizing or concentrating, some people concentrate on a flame or on a particular sound. Those are all helpful in meditation, helpful in our spiritual journey. In fact, as I said, this technique of focusing on a form, our master Swami Chinmayananda, when he was a young boy, his parents used to do elaborate rituals for hours on end. And he used to get completely bored. You know, as a young boy, he was forced to sit for 2 hours, 3 hours. But there was a picture of God, or a statue, I think, and he would, which was in front of them. And so he started playing a game. He would close his eyes and try to visualize. And when he couldn't, he would open his eyes, stare at that form, look at it for 20 minutes, 10 minutes, and then again close and try. And so playing a game, that became for him a very powerful spiritual. So even as a young child, he did not know that he was doing this particular form of concentration. But so anytime that he could close his eyes and clearly visualize the form of God. But concentration is not meditation. It is helpful in meditation. In fact, there are certain techniques of meditation where certain people practice where they tell them that as you progress in meditation, you will hear certain sounds. Maybe you will hear ringing of bells, or you will hear some, you know, some conch or some sound. So they focus on that. Or they say you will see blue light, you know, you will see a light, or you will see blue light, and when the light comes. So people get so caught up in that, you know, in their meditation, they're waiting, you know, when will that sound appear, or when will I see that light? And when they see it, I have reached, I have realized, you know, I have seen that blue light which my guru told me, or I have heard those sounds. Those are good, you know, those are, if it happens, that's fine. If it doesn't happen, it does not mean that you are not progressing in meditation. But if it happens and if you believe in it, it's okay. But that should not be the goal or purpose of meditation. It should not be to hear a sound or to see a light. Because if just because you saw a blue light in meditation does not mean you are a realized master. Because what happened to the blue light? The blue light came. Right? You were sitting and there was nothing there. And the blue light came. And then you could, in your meditation, very clearly see a very strong blue light. And then the blue light, after a while, disappeared. Right? It didn't stay forever. Or that sound you heard of the bells or whatever came and then disappeared. So what comes and what disappears cannot be the permanent self, cannot be the Lord Himself. It can be a pointer, it can be a roadmark, but if anything appears and disappears, that is not the goal of meditation, that is a signpost that may tell you, okay, you know, if you heard it, fine, but it does not again mean that if I didn't hear a sound or I didn't see a light or didn't see a blue light, I'm not evolving in meditation, because those are, in my opinion, projections of the mind. And if they happen, that's good. If it doesn't happen, it's not good. So concentration is not meditation. How about worship God? You say, you should worship God. You say, that is not meditation. No, that is not. That's good. They're not saying that one should not worship. It is very good, because when you worship God with love and dedication, it purifies your mind. A mind which has a lot of negative vasanas, a lot of anger, greed, jealousy, hatred, complaining, selfishness. So as I remember the Lord, as I chant His name, what happens is the chanting of God's name or remembering God purifies the mind. So there are various ways to worship God. One is you could go to the church or temple, light a candle, offer some flowers, you know, do some elaborate rituals. That is one. The second is mentally, you know, you sit and think of God, you know, you think of Jesus, how His compassion, His wonderful qualities, His love, His sacrifice. Or for a Hindu, he could think of Krishna's stories, how He used to play and what He did and His message of the Bhagavad Gita. Or for my guru, you know, for a Sikh, it could be what my guru sacrificed and what they taught us. So mentally, you could remember the Lord. You could physically pray. You could tell about His glories. You could go and tell people, you know, stories about God. Or you could tell your children, you know, what Jesus did or what Krishna did or what Guru did. So those are all ways of worshiping God. You can worship Him physically, mentally, by speech, by telling His stories. But the best way to worship God is to serve the world. Because the God is nothing but this whole world is nothing but God appearing in front of me. Because God alone was, and from him came this universe. So when I see God in everybody, and when I serve somebody or when I help somebody, not with an attitude of arrogance or pride, but with an attitude of that the Lord himself is here in front of me. When I'm cooking, some guests are coming to my house, instead of saying, you know, why do these people come here? Thanksgiving, every year I have to cook for the whole family. Why do I have to do that? No, the Lord is coming to my house on Thanksgiving. They're all my family. They're all God himself. So then when I'm cooking for them, then my attitude becomes an attitude of service. I'm serving the Lord when I'm feeding them. Even when I'm cleaning the dishes afterwards, instead of complaining about it, oh, it's such a mess and nobody else helps. No, God came and God ate and I'm cleaning the dishes. So every activity, and even when I'm serving the poor or feeding the homeless, you know, instead of saying, oh, these guys are useless and worthless. No, God is in them too. So when I'm feeding the homeless on Thanksgiving or any occasion, I should do it with the attitude, not that I'm superior and they are inferior, but that God is there in every one of them. So that attitude of worship of God purifies the mind. Mind becomes quiet. Mind becomes unselfish. And in that mind, the knowledge can come. Now, what is the knowledge? We'll talk about last. And then same thing with chanting. You know, here also we do that. We chant Om, you know, before we meditate, or you can chant the name of God, or you can chant mantras, you know, Soham, I am that, or, you know, whatever name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost, or the prayer of Saint Francis. You know, different people use different. Those are all good. They help to purify the mind and make the mind single-pointed. My mind, which has so many thoughts at one time, you know, what am I going to do? Where am I going to go? What am I going to wear? By chanting, it becomes single-pointed. And in that silence, then you can contemplate upon who am I. So the question is, who am I? And that is the goal of meditation. That is the purpose of meditation. To know anything, I have to have knowledge. I have to have senses, use my senses, or I have to have inference. Like say you're in a room next door and I call out to you and I say, oh, is Diana there? Now, first of all, you have to have a knowledge of who Diana is. If you don't know who Diana is, you say, I don't know. Who is she? I have no idea. Okay, you say, oh, she's tall, she's this, I describe her, or you know her. Okay, so you have the knowledge. Then the room, suppose, is pitch black. It's dark and you can't see anything. My senses are not working. You say, I can't see. I don't know if she's here or not. She may be, she may not be. Then you call out, Diana, are you here? And if she answers, you hear it and you say, okay, yeah, she is here. So either by knowledge or by senses, by hearing or by inference. Inference is like, you know, you see smoke. So when you see smoke, then you infer, yeah, there must be a fire. You know, if there is smoke, there should be a fire. So any of those three things can be used to know something. So to know a person, I need to have those three things. But how about to know myself? Like I am in a dark room and I am sitting there and somebody asks me, are you there? So am I going to say, wait a minute, let me turn on the light so I can see myself if I'm here or not, or I have to call out, am I here? Or I have to have an inference? No, I know I am here. You know, I don't have to have the lights on. I don't have to feel myself to see if I'm here. The moment I wake up, I immediately know who I am. I don't have to be reminded like some. I don't get up in the morning and say, I'm a man, I'm a man, I'm a human, I'm a human. I don't chant the mantra, you know, 108 times, I'm a human, I'm a human, I'm a human. No, people might think I'm crazy. They might lock me up. So it is not chanting, it is not repeating, it is an awareness of who I am. I know that I am a human, I know that I am a man, I know that I am a woman or whatever. Nobody needs to remind me. Of course, there are some people, you know, who may not know it and they may need to be reminded. This reminds me of a story, I told it a while back, but it's very funny, it can be repeated. This man used to think that he's a chicken. He always thought that I'm a chicken. And he would go around telling, clucking, and, you know, and talk, saying, I'm a chicken. The people said, you're not a chicken, you're a man. No, 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 I'm a chicken. And he loved, and then anytime a cat would come, he would get scared. She might eat me up because I'm a chicken. So they said, this guy is seeing something seriously wrong with him. Take him to a psychiatrist. And psychiatrist said, oh, I can fix him, don't worry. So 3 times a week, you know, $75 a session, 3 times a week for 6 months, he gives him psychotherapy treatment and all that. And finally, after 6 months, he says, what are you? He says, I'm a man. See, he's cured. Ah, the psychiatrist is very happy. You can go now. Are you a chicken or a man? I'm a man, doctor. I know I'm a man. Very good. The psychiatrist is very happy. So this man leaves. And psychiatrist then gets his next patient and he's seeing him. Man goes out of the psychiatrist's office, sees a cat. He gets scared and runs back into the office. And he says, tells the receptionist, I have to see the psychiatrist. The doctor, he says, he's with another patient. I don't care. He runs into that, opens the door, and the psychiatrist is with another. Doctor, doctor, what happened? He says, didn't I just tell you you're a man? He says, yeah. He says, and what is the problem? He says, I saw a cat. He says, so what if you saw a cat? You know, you are a man. He says, doctor, I know I am a man. You know I am a man. But does the cat know that I am a man? So I don't need to be told who I am. So similarly, for a person who has meditated for a while, a realized master, he or she knows that who am I? I am the self. I am the spirit. I am that consciousness. Some people think I am the body and the consciousness gives me awareness. You know, people always think I am this body and this soul came into me, the consciousness came into me, and then I became alive and then I started functioning. But a realized master says, no, I am the awareness and I am illumining this body. It's a very, very wonderful difference. Some people think I am this body and there is a consciousness in me which is illumining my conscience, which is making me alive. They say, no, I am this consciousness and I am illumining this body. And that is the clear understanding. So a wise person always knows. You wake him up and you tell him, who are you? Of course, he might tell his name for functioning sake, but inside he knows that I am that awareness, I am that consciousness, I am that life principle, I am that, and there is only one consciousness, and I pervade the whole universe. When I am consciousness, everything is that consciousness. So I pervade the whole universe, I am everywhere. Actually, of course, the person is not going to say that because he knows he's 6 feet tall and, you know, 130 pounds and whatever, you know, his weight and height and all. He's there, but he knows those are the dimensions of my body. My body is 6 feet tall, 160 pounds, fair, dark, black, white, whatever color, shape, skin. But in reality, so I do not need knowledge or senses or inference. Those things I need from the teacher. The teacher will tell us that you are not this body, you are not this mind, you are not this intellect, you are not the perceiver, feeler, and thinker, you are not even the desires, but you are the consciousness. And so complete and effortless abidance in that, always remembering that, always practicing that. And ultimately, as we have said before also, you start out by saying, I am that consciousness, I am that awareness, but inside you understand that that I also disappears, that little I, whether it's Anil or Diana or what Carmen, whatever my name or form is, everything is nothing but that one consciousness. That alone is, he alone is, or she alone is, or that. Because if you say he or she, then you are personifying God as a male or a female. But God is that energy, that substratum, that formless support of the whole universe. That's why we say God is neither male nor female, has no form, has no shape, no color, no dimensions. That's why in the Bible, it's very interesting. In the Bible, a lot has been written about Jesus, you know, the Son. I am the Son of my Father in heaven. But if you read the Bible, nowhere is there a description of Father in heaven. Who is the Father in heaven? Where is he? What does he do? Christ has deliberately not described, because the Father in heaven cannot be described. The Father in heaven does not have a shape, does not have a form. It's not a bearded old person. Has no shape, has no form, has no appearance, no color, no properties, no qualities. It is the support and substratum of the whole universe. And Christ's final understanding was the Father in heaven and I are one. And that is the state of realization where ultimately even Christ disappears and the Father alone lives. And that's what he said, that even when this form of Christ disappears, the Father in heaven alone will be. And that understanding that there is only one consciousness, Brahman, you can call it Father in heaven, you can call it Brahman. But even when you use the word Father, then it becomes that it is a male. One should remember that it's neither male nor female, does not have a form, shape, color, but is the support, the substratum of this whole universe. I think Christ had to, you know, all the masters have to use certain words. So they use the words for you and I to understand. But the truth of it is that this form of God cannot be described and is my inner self, is my true nature. I am nothing but that consciousness functioning through this body. So continuous, effortless abidance in that knowledge, where this person never forgets. Always, even when he or she is functioning in the world, they never forget that. That is meditation. It is none of these. It is not sitting still. It is not concentrating. It is not worshipping. It is not chanting. It's not even an activity. Why is not an activity? We'll cover that next week. Because we say meditation is an activity, right? You sit down and you sit with your back erect and then you observe your breath and then you relax your body. It's not even that. So we'll talk more about next week why it is not an activity. But it is awareness. Just as breathing is not an activity, you can't, somebody comes and says, what are you doing? You say, wait a minute, don't bother me. I'm busy breathing. You know, no, you don't need to be busy breathing. You just effortlessly you breathe. Even when you're asleep, you are breathing. Even when you're awake, you are breathing. Even when you're walking. If you become aware, it's fine, but after a while you forget. So similarly, knowing the true self is not an activity, it is an understanding. So this is the summary of the first verse. Any comments, any questions?
So when, you know, the more you think about it, it becomes a little more clear. But to me, this is the same.
Right.
I mean, because meditation has always been perceived as an activity. So it's like new information that it's not an activity.
It is awareness. The activity you do for a while, but then that awareness stays with you all the time. And that is meditation, being aware of that. And you may be sitting in fact, the realized masters don't even meditate. After a while, they don't need to, because they all the time live in that awareness. Just as you and I live in the awareness that I'm a man or a woman or a human, they live in the awareness that I am the self. So they don't need to meditate. Raman Maharishi or Swami Chinmayananda, they never sat down to meditate. They would teach others how to meditate, but they themselves didn't feel the need to do it, because they had already discovered the goal of meditation. They had become one with that. And so then they find no need to sit 20 minutes and with the back erect and all, because they are all the time in meditation. That's why he could say you should meditate 24 hours a day. Meditation should not only be done for 20 minutes or half an hour. But that abidance or that understanding should become so firm in your mind that nothing should shake it. Even no matter what kind of physical problems are coming, okay, they're happening to the body. Mental stress is happening to the mind. Failure, success, confusion is happening to the intellect. But nothing is happening to me, because I am not this body. I am that self. So that awareness then makes you free of all problems. Then no problems can affect you. Even the world's biggest sorrow cannot affect you. Even you can be crucified, or you can be burned, or you can be, you know, tortured or killed, but I am not this body. That understanding can come when you have become one, and then nothing can affect you. Nobody can then create any problem, whether your husband or wife or child or boss or neighbor, no one can affect you.
So So for me, it was hard to differentiate between one and the other in the levels that I probably haven't achieved yet.
True. Daydreaming is probably you're doing involuntarily, while in meditation you are actually planning and sitting down, and it is through right understanding. See, one is when as a child you were daydreaming, you know, that means you are getting out of this physical state and in a different mental state. But here you are consciously abiding in that. So there is a difference between daydreaming and meditation, but yeah, the experience could be similar, where you have this out-of-body experience and all. But ultimately, that this understanding should be with you at all times. But that's good. Yeah, if you can go into that silence, that's very nice.